Welcome to the Smarter, Wealthier podcast, presented by Jags Mechanical, with your host, Spencer Dillinger, and co-host, Gabe Rogers. And here they are.
All right, welcome back to the Smarter, Wealthier podcast. This is episode 2. I'm here with Gabe Rogers again, and we have Mike Rogers, the founder of Jags Mechanical here, a veteran and serial entrepreneur. He is also one of the best refrigeration techs to ever work in Cincinnati.
According to who? No, I'm just kidding.
Self-proclaimed, I guess.
He's not only built Jags Mechanical into a multi-trade powerhouse, but he's also served as a coach and mentor to dozens of individuals, including myself. So, Mike Rogers, how are you today?
It sounds like you read his Wikipedia page.
Somebody else wrote that.
It was his ChatGPT page.
There's a liar in there, too. How are you doing? I'm good today. Awesome. Thanks for having me.
Awesome. Yeah. So, last time we talked about the trades versus college, and we looked at a conservative college approach, and we looked at a pretty standard approach to being in the trades.
Yeah, we looked at we had to change the way we were wording things because we kept saying uneducated, and I was changed last week to say differently educated. So we're going to start using the word differently educated going forward instead of uneducated people.
Absolutely, absolutely. Mike, you have been in both seats, sort of. You went to college and you were a tech.
Yeah, when I graduated, or when I was in high school, the overwhelming message to young people then was, you are a loser if you don't go to college. And my outlook on life was, you know, I have to go to college. I had some football opportunities. I played high school football. I wrestled. Some of those opportunities, I bypassed them and decided to go to the Army. To get high college paid for. So that's the direction I went, and I got started in college. The problem was is there is no, if you don't know what you're going to do, you're going to waste a lot of money. If you don't know what your path in life is, you're going to waste a lot of money in college. And so you sit there for the first year and a half to 2 years just paying for things that they just tell you you have to pay for. And that starts getting a little bit overwhelming when you start looking at the debt you're piling up. And yes, the Army helped pay for it, but they didn't pay for all of it. So I think I found myself in $13,000 worth of debt in a year and a half. And that started to get a little daunting, and I wasn't making any progress. So I had to do something different. I did meet the woman I eventually married somewhere in the middle of all that, and that was kind of a catalyst to get me into the workforce.
So what was your major?
First major was business. Okay. So at Kent State University, I majored in business. Problem with the business major, it required math classes, and that was a fail. My second major, when I moved to the University of Akron, and I also moved home at the same time with my dad, was music. I was going to become a music education major. So I studied music the first semester at the University of Akron and continued on into the second semester. Then I looked at my future outlook, and it looked grim. What it did was I had some type of epiphany at the time. It was like, is this what life is going to be? I'm going to work my tail off, get myself into debt, and then I'm going to work for the next 25 years digging myself out of that debt. And then you're going to get to the end of your life and you did it just exactly the way they told you to do it. And probably the first idea I ever had that what they are telling me is probably not what's best for me. So
you went on to study music at the University of Akron. So you would fall in the majority of people that aren't using their major in their careers today. We talked about they're only 27%, I believe. Last week we were talking about
this is true. I got in church at the same time, got baptized in Jesus' name. Same time frame. It was 1989, and went to church. And what was funny is, within less than 2 months of being in church, could you help us out on the piano? And I sat down at the piano, and they didn't have sheet music. They didn't have anything that was learned. You just had to sit down and by ear start playing the piano. And it took about 3 or 4 months for me to catch on to how they did things. And I used music for probably the next 25 to 30 years in church. So it was 4 times a week. I had an outlet for it. And hopefully that's what gave this ugly dude sitting beside me some impetus to get into music. And he's taken it to about 10 levels above what I did. So he could have got into the... we don't have a cough button, do we? he got into it and took it a lot further. So I'm glad about that. So I did use my major, but I never got paid for it. In fact, it cost me a lot of money.
Yeah,
I knocked on my... it was funny. My uncle started a business the year before, and I had talked to him, maybe a family reunion or something. And so I was up in the neighborhood, and I drove up to his house. He had his office in his house, and I knocked on his door. What do you want? A job. And he goes, if you know anybody out there while you're running around, just talk to them and see if they need it. He said, part-time or full-time? I said, full-time. He goes, we're looking for a service tech. I said, before anything else, I said, I'll take the job. And he said, you don't even know what it is. I go, I don't care. He says, you don't even know what it pays. I don't care. I got to get started. Well, little did I know that right then I was getting into a career, something I absolutely was good at. Didn't know that in the first 3 months. I thought I was going to get fired in the first 3 months. But once I figured some things out, it's a job I absolutely adored, and I couldn't think of doing a better job for the first 25, 30 years. It was phenomenal. The best time I ever had in my life. I accomplished something every day. And so it was just the start of something that, of course, I didn't know what I was getting into the day I took the job. And it was $5. It was $5 an hour, by the way, which was probably 30-40% over minimum wage at the time.
Okay.
So it's fairly equal to what we do now. It was a good wage back then, 1989. I know that sounds...
No, I totally get it.
Sounds like nickels today, but back then it was an okay job to get started. And it all worked out, so...
So what were some of the things that were maybe early challenges when you first got into the trades, first started that first job for your uncle?
My biggest hurdle was learning how to work. I had been in school, so I'd been in seasons. So I had football. I was a hard worker, I guess. You know, you'd work hard in football and work hard in wrestling, but they were always seasons. And so... being consistent throughout an entire year was a little bit to get used to. There was no, I'm not running towards an end. There isn't a climax to this season. We're looking for a championship game or we're looking for the championship match. Then it's all going to be over and you get to kick back and relax. That had been my life up until then. There's a baseball season. There's a football season. There's a wrestling season. And when you turn 18, 19, and even going into college, it was, first semester, second semester, there's a goal at the end of this. And what it turned out to be was we didn't have those type of things. And it was just consistently staying on top of your game at all time. And probably one of the things that we've overcome in the last couple of years is that seasons, we go in quarters here and we have a, hey, we're working for this 13 week and we have a set deadline. Probably wasn't intentional. And in fact, sitting here in this in this meeting right now is the first time I ever even thought about that, that we actually overcame that and put it into seasons.
I was thinking about that while you were saying it, because I'm like,
it's like we just did that.
And we have a champion at the end of each of them, because we put it on our leaderboard systems.
And then we push the reset button, and it's as though we have a new season every quarter, and we have a new winner, or the same winner, every quarter. So, okay,
and
I digress.
Just the fact, like, that we do rocks as a leadership team, it gives you, you know, a 13-week period to really run hard at that, whatever that goal is.
Yeah.
And the next quarter you have a new goal.
And sometimes you have the Patriots, and it's the same guy winning every stinking time.
What an amazing thing. So that was one of the hardest things to overcome as a young worker was, and in my uncle's business, it wasn't. It was just go out and fix refrigeration. I fixed ice cream machines, soft serve ice cream machines. And I learned the trade. I learned refrigeration. I learned electricity. I learned plumbing just by that. They were all water-cooled machines, or 95% of them were water-cooled machines. And I learned the trade from a gentleman named Jimmy Little, who's passed on. But I owe probably all of my success to my uncle and my mentor at the time, who taught me the basics of the refrigeration trade. And went to work for another company called Miller's Refrigeration in Akron, Ohio, for 5 years. They worked on all refrigeration and only refrigeration. So it was ice machines, refrigerators. So I learned quite a bit from them.
And how long did you work for your uncle before going?
I did 4 years there. I went into sales for about a year. I failed miserably in the sales field. Failed horrendously. And in fact, I fell back on one of my customers, Miller's Refrigeration, for a job. When I was like, I quit. I quit a minute and a half before I got fired in that sales job. So it was like, you stink at this. But went to work for him for about 4 years. Went back to my uncle in 99. And then for personal reasons, life fell apart in 99, and I ended up in Cincinnati. Got a job with Edwards Electrical Mechanical. They did everything. So they didn't have they did rooftop units. They did.
Just for my own curiosity, when did you first start working on HVAC at all?
Edwards. 2000.
Okay. So you were in the industry for 9 years?
11 years.
Yeah. 11 years before you even touched
I even looked
HVAC.
At one. I never looked at one. In fact, if a rooftop unit was jumping up and down on the roof and the bearings were out of the plant, I never even noticed. Couldn't have cared less. I was working on the walk-in cooler. It was, and so when I came down here and you had to work on that stuff, and they didn't have the greatest training program. It was basically, you can work on refrigeration. You must be able to do everything here. Go take this building and do everything. And that was the trial by fire. So I did get in trouble there. I got in trouble by not knowing what I didn't know. A lot of people don't know what they don't know. You do know what you do know, but you have no idea what you don't know. And an economizer filter caught me about 9 months later. And which was a good thing, because when you do make mistakes, you get put into positions where you either quit. I mean, a lot of people say the cliche is you either win or you learn. I hate it called failure. I failed miserably, but it was an opportunity to get into a class that I wouldn't have even thought to go that direction. But the boss said, get him into this class. And it was a refrigeration class. And I'm like, I know refrigeration.
I've been doing this 11 years.
I've been doing this 11 years. And when I went to the class, I learned all the things that I had been doing, but I learned the actual technical terms and did the thing. So education, I believe in. Because at that point, I became really, really good at what I was doing on the HVAC side, on the refrigeration side. And so I became a very valuable employee at that time. And then people sought me out, and a guy gave me a humongous raise to come work for him. And it was a dangerous move, I knew. It was a sketchy company. Not sketchy like they did illegal things. It was sketchy because the guy was kind of sketchy. But I went to work for him for a couple years, and he paid me so much money, and we did so much good, that when he got into financial trouble and he was going to have to do something with me, I said, I don't think anybody's going to pay me this much. So this leads into your next question, so I'll preempt it. This is how I started a business, is because I just didn't think anybody would pay me this much.
So what was there an exact moment that you were like, I've got to start my own company? Was there a specific conversation you remember?
You have to realize that, you know, you're leading life, and a bunch of people always talk about you should do this on your own. Mm. And if you're coming to work here, I can guarantee you that people are going to say the same exact thing to all of our technicians. And I knew that. But they've always said it, and I've always thought you should do this on your own. You should do it. And I always had some days. Someday I'll do this, and someday I'll do that. And one day I'll do this, and one day I'll do that. Well, I came home from a vacation, and my paycheck was in the mail, and it was there. And there was also a letter in there that said, you're going to have to begin to pay for your own health insurance premiums. And they were $1,300 a month. At the time, my house payment was $600 a month, which was my biggest bill. And I basically got angry, and it was like 3:00 in the afternoon on Friday in October, and I couldn't say 5 minutes later, I was in my car, and I was at the bank, and I opened up a business bank account with $50. And the guy in the bank says, so what's the name of your company? I was like, do we need a name of a company to open a bank account? He goes, yeah, we're going to need the name of the company. And basically, this is, I started the company as Mike Rogers Refrigeration. And that's how fast it took me to name the company was. You need the name of a company right now. So I had to do it. And I started this company with $50. And basically, that's all I had to spare out of that paycheck was $50, and that was stretching it. And I was making good money, but I was also just coming back from vacation, and my wife was a stay-at-home mom, and she was pregnant with my now 18-year-old son, who just graduated from high school a couple weeks ago. So it was we were tight funded. But I started the company about 2 weeks later, and it took off from there. And I didn't have a job. Basically, a buddy of mine asked me to put in his fireplace in his home, his gas fireplace, and I piped the gas over to it. And then I went to Roanoke, Bedford, Virginia. I think you were there. We went to Bedford, Virginia, and I did service call there and changed out an air handler in a ceiling for a friend. And that was basically my first week's jobs, were two friends that I helped out. And it started to grow from there. I don't remember there ever being a day when I didn't have work to do. From the day I started, there was always something to do. So it wasn't like I ever sat around for a day. Even if I didn't have anything in the morning, I would start selling. And I basically say this all the time. In the first 10, 12 years of this business, I probably spent less than 5 days on sales. Because once you got a job, then word of mouth, hey, this guy's available to do this. And in the beginning, you take almost everything that you're capable of doing. And some things you take that you're not even close to capable of doing. And you just stretch it out. So that's basically the way it got started. There's no aha moment. It was like, I did it to feed my family, and that was all. I don't want it to sound like there's great things that went on.
Now, you have a pretty interesting story about how you got into self-education and how you got started really with self-development. And we've talked a lot about education and how, you know, you're not anti-education. We had to balance that last week as we're talking about the scenario. It's not anti-education. It's just, hey, have you considered this other option that nobody ever talks about? But do you mind sharing just how you got started with self-development and personal development?
Yeah, the hard thing about it is when you don't know that it exists, it's a hard thing to even come across. You spend years, you're like, I wish somebody would teach me something, but a lot of that, there's nothing out there that's readily available. At least that's what you think. So I was doing a service call at a Kroger.
And this is before the internet, too.
This is really before the internet. We did have, like, Borders books and Barnes & Noble's bookstores and things like that. But you wouldn't know. You know, there's thousands of books on the shelf. Which one do you buy? Where do you start? So I was in a Kroger, did a service call. There happened to be a Starbucks in the Kroger, and right next to the cooler I was working on, and there's the magazine rack. So I walked down the magazine aisle, and there was this magazine called Success. I was like, that's interesting. Yeah, I want to be successful. And it said, its byline was, what achievers read. I was like, I want to be an achiever one day. So I grabbed the magazine, and all I was going to do is just sit down and thumb through a magazine, drink a cup of coffee, watch the cooler go from 75 degrees down to 30. I just waste about 45 minutes. This was a good place that you could sit down. This is not what we teach our technicians. But this was a good place because this was a very remote cooler owner that didn't care. This was a set price, and there was nothing. Anyway, I could sit there for 2 hours. It wouldn't have cost them more or less.
But you were doing the right thing.
I was doing the right, yeah. I was staying there making sure it made temperature. So I sat down and started reading an article on Tony Robbins. And he was the pitcher. I'd never heard of the guy. And so I'm reading this article, and it's fascinating. It's unbelievable what the guy was saying. And Darren Hardy was the editor of the magazine asking the questions. So when it was all over and the refrigerator made temp, I basically got the ticket signed. I bought the magazine, went home that night, read it cover to cover. I read the page numbers. I was enthralled. And in the back of the book, it said, here's 10 books that people that want to achieve something should read. And it was a list of the books. And here's number one and number two. And number one was Success Through a Positive Mental Attitude by Napoleon Hill. And number two was How to Win Friends and Influence People by Dale Carnegie. And so I think that was like 7 or 8 o'clock that night. The next morning, I was at Borders Books or Barnes & Noble's. I don't remember which one. And I bought both of those books right then. But I started on Success Through a Positive Mental Attitude. And
this was how many years ago?
This is 2007, I believe. 2007 okay. or... 2007, I believe. Yeah.
So like 18 years ago.
Yeah, like 18 years ago. And I started. And what's funny is I didn't know this about myself. It's probably my best. This is my superpower. My son hates it, but it's my superpower.
But
it's
had an impact for Jags for the good.
Immensely. I think it's the reason we're successful is because I read Success Through a Positive Mental Attitude. There is a chapter in the... Can I go into this?
Yeah.
Yeah, there's a chapter in that book, and I don't remember the chapter 8, 9, 10, somewhere in there. And it talks about an insurance company receiving a building that was on Michigan Avenue in Chicago during the Depression. And the building was empty. And they gave it to this young man as a project. Fill this building up. Get this building making us money because it's empty and it's the Depression. And so the young man had to have a positive mental attitude or a negative mental attitude. Well, his attitude was, let's see what we can do with it. So he chose all of the companies in the city of Chicago that he would like to have as tenants. And he went to each one of them and said, here's the deal. I will remodel the space to your specifications. I will give you 1 year free rent. And he said, and I'll pay off your current lease so if you move in immediately, as soon as it's done. And his thought process was, I've got an empty building that I have to remodel anyhow. Why not skip a step and not do a basic remodel and then take it to the tenants? He said, let's just go from zero to what the tenant wants. He says, it's empty now. I'm not making any income. So if I don't make any income for the next year, I'm in the same situation I'm in right now. He said, and I was thinking that their lease would probably be less than 6 months if I make this deal with them and by the time we're done remodeling, their next lease turnover would be less than a year. So I'd have a less than 6 months to pay on their leases. So I was calculating it out, and he said, and it pretty much came true. And within 18 to 24 months, I haven't read that part of the book for a long time. Within 18 to 24 months, the building was full, and he had the best tenants, the most successful companies in the city of Chicago, and they were all his tenants right there on Michigan Avenue, and it was a success. So this is my superpower. The very next morning, that was a Wednesday night, I remember that, I called, I had one, am I allowed to say the names of our company?
Yeah.
Chili's. I had one Chili's, just one single store, but I knew the manager well, and called him, and I said, hey, give me the number of your regional manager. Called up the regional manager. They had 10 stores, and they said, hey, I want all 10 of your stores for one single price, but here's the deal. I've got to do an inspection of all the stores you got to pay me for, and all of the things that are not up to standard, I have to bring up to standard personally, and I'll give it to you for this one single price. I'll provide all the labor, and I'll provide all the parts. And lo and behold, it wasn't a week and a half later, we signed that contract, and it was like $96,000 a year in revenue. It was a $22,000 inspection fee and a $56,000 worth of repairs. And I had that within 3 or 4 weeks. I basically made my entire first year's revenue with one deal.
With one idea.
With one idea. And it came from that book. And it was like my first year I did $198,000 in revenue. In my second year, I had almost $170,000 in work.
Contracts
from this one deal, from this one idea, from this one book. And basically, that's my superpower. Because as soon as I read it and I can think of an idea, I will have it implemented by this afternoon.
Yeah.
And he hates me for that because I do it 12 times a quarter.
Yeah, well, that was the part I was going to jump in and say is part of doing so much stuff is caused us to get where we're at, but now we have a little bit more of a controlled way of grow, and when we see these ideas, we actually run through them and put the entire plan together. That way it flows fast.
Yeah.
When it's one person, it's a lot easier to just jump in and just do it. It's one person. But now that you have almost 40-plus people running an operation, it's a little bit difficult to do one plan today and then next week do a different plan.
Well, what I think is really interesting is just the positive mental attitude helped you implement the thing, right? And mm-hmm. that's something that you and I were talking about last week, Gabe. Just on service calls, and we talk about this a lot with technicians, that during the service call there's like this roller coaster ride of emotions that you're kind of up against when you go out to a call, especially difficult calls. And
it's in the micro. It happens to you daily. It happens to you in life. It happens to you in business. There's a roller coaster of emotions in every single day, and it can be hourly. And the good thing about what we do is we do small jobs. So we're done in 4 hours. And in that 4 hours, you can go through a lifetime of emotions. You can go from I'm scared to death, then I see what's going on. You head into the repair, then that repair didn't pan out the way you thought it would. You went down the wrong rabbit trail. The panic sets in, okay? And then you go, and then you back up and you get your positive mental attitude on, okay, that wasn't it, what is it? And then you find the answer and then you fix it. And then there's the euphoria of success, because generally we just don't end our days in failure. That's the good thing about doing what we do.
We were talking about
a salesman is a failure 8 out of 10 times, and he's a humongous success. If we fail 1 out of 100, we're an absolute failure.
It's so like being an offensive lineman.
Yeah, we are success.
If you let one sack by, you're a terrible offensive lineman.
Yeah. Yeah. So we just end the day in success. By the time
you're driving home, you're like, that was an easy call.
Yeah, and basically, yeah, you guys had to do was podcast is like, I suck. No, I'm pretty good.
Yeah.
It was a great day.
Yeah.
And by the time you tell your wife, man, everything was wonderful today.
Yeah, when you walk in, how was your day? Oh, it was easy. I had a great day. It was fine.
So, yep. But that's the positive man I had to. He did come up with it. He said something, because when you're running a small company, you have a guy in it who is the, what do we call it?
Calling all the shots.
I'm calling all the shots. So I'm
your
the
hands in everything going on.
Hands in everything. When you fill out your org chart, your name's on almost every position.
And not only that, when you lay out a new idea, the guy you're laying out to is also in your brain. Yes. So he understands what your idea is as well.
The day I did that with Chili's, I was the only guy in the company. I think I might have had a helper. So there was two people. I didn't have to clear it with anybody. I didn't even have to see if it was going. I made that idea up by the time I went to bed. And by the time I woke up, my subconscious had taken that thing completely out into 50 different. I already had it all laid out. And then I went to, and I called Mark Davis, and he was like, send me the documentation. Sent it. We vetted it out. We didn't get lawyers involved.
Well, this is 18 years ago. How did you send that document out?
I mailed it. Or when I delivered it, I don't remember how. Hey, will you be here? I will be there. I'll have a piece of paper with me. So it was just, I was doing paper invoices back then. And
it's really interesting how that's kind of come with the company as it's grown, too, because I forget who it was that said it to me the other day, but they said one of the things they liked about the way Jags is run is that we have a lot of the benefits that a lot of bigger companies would have, but we still operate and treat people the way that a small company does. And just like talking about being able to implement stuff quickly, if I think of an idea or he thinks of an idea, we can bring it to a weekly meeting and by the next week be taking action on it. So it's still very fast. It's just more people involved and more.
Yeah, you'd really like to. I really want to.
We have great people. I mean, that's
one
of
our
that.
Core values is optimism, and it's our first one, and it's probably the one that is the one I demanded. So it's a demand of mine. I don't want to be around negative people. I don't want to work with them. I've done that. It's a major fail. So if that ever changes, I don't ever want to be a part of a company that does that. And part of being optimistic is not only being able to implement things like that. What I want to do for the employees, this is really, I hope this doesn't sound like sales. What I really want to do for you guys is open up your doors, let you think, let you have the freedom to explore, find better ways, find more efficient ways, find. If I'm the only guy doing that, this is going to be a really short run.
It's an uphill climb.
Yeah, and it's an uphill climb. I want to open it for every single person in this building that optimism is a thought pattern. It's not sunshine and rainbows. It's the way you think. Yeah. It's you have to believe that something good is going to come out of the direction I'm thinking. I can make this be good because I have the power to do it.
Even if this is not going, whatever I'm dealing with right now is not going well, there is a way to make it
work. There is a way to do it. And really, we talk about it, and when I teach it in the core values class, we have a core values class after somebody's been brought in, and we teach that is the way you talk to yourself and the way you talk. The way you talk to yourself internally and the way you talk to others externally. And it's always in a positive manner. How can I, instead of saying, I can't. Yeah. Instead of saying it. Because if you say those things, you're making a declaration to your brain. And your brain just says, okay, I can't. You're right. But if you say, how can I, you open up a world of possibilities to your subconscious. And like, I remember the night. I remember it. It's vivid because the night I popped off my pillow at 3 o'clock in the morning and said, oh, I know how to grow. The biggest issue in a running a trade organization is I'm giving away intellectual property. I'm giving it to men. who, if they're even the slightest bit entrepreneurial, have the opportunity to just go start another company and become my competitor within 5 years. And so you run the risk. And so not everybody's an entrepreneur, not everybody is, but what we like to employ are people that have this drive. And so we had this issue, you and I and Gabe. It's like, what are we going to do? I don't want to just produce competitors. So it was funny. I wonder how we can fix that problem. And I don't know. We sat, it wasn't long. It wasn't real long.
No, and I think like even this podcast being called Smarter and Wealthier is specifically targeting people that want to be in the trades.
Yep. But I remember the night that it happened. It was just, I popped off the pillow and I was like, here's the answer. And I just came in the next morning and I said, hey, Chick-fil-A. That's all I said to you, is Chick-fil-A. You go, what are you talking about? I said, this is how Chick-fil-A does it.
What's the quick start popping out on the Colby score right there? He gave you all the information.
I gave you all the information you needed. Chick-fil-A. Just look at how Chick-fil-A does it. And all we did was just mimicked the way Chick-fil-A does it. And we have another branch in Columbus. And basically, the original company that was in Cincinnati is like, well, let's create the branch and just hand this to a branch manager. And that type of thing just grew out of saying, how can we? How can we do this and not create our own competitors? Why don't we just gather them all in here and just let them compete against themselves and be a team?
And so one of the things that I can always tell customers about and have their interest is how we started the Columbus branch. So we're coming to a close, so I want to leave it kind of on a cliffhanger here for us to revisit that next week. But
we're already done with a half an hour.
Yes, we are.
We're at 36 and a half minutes right now.
So
it goes
sorry,
pretty
guys.
Quick. It goes pretty
no,
quick.
No, this is great. But today we've talked about how you got started in the trades. We've talked about how you got started in business. And we've talked about kind of what your goals are for technicians that work here and how that came about and the effect the positive mental attitude has had on this company and the way that we do business. I want to wrap up just real quick from both of you. What would your advice to somebody who's just starting out in the trades be? This is just, after all we've talked about, you guys have both started in the trades in different ways at different times in your life, so
I'll
let you go first.
He actually mentioned something earlier when he began talking about when he first started working for his uncle. The first 3 months, he didn't know if he was getting fired or what was going on. And that's one of the things that getting in the trades, you're going to do a lot of stuff that you didn't know that you could do. And don't get discouraged when it doesn't go right for you right off the rip. I mean, you're doing something completely different. I remember, I think I even mentioned it last week in our podcast, when I first started, I was an electrician, man. I come in, I'm running the first electrical job by myself. I had no one to back me up. And I was like, oh, crap, what do I do now? When stuff goes wrong, well, you have to figure it out. And a little bit of don't get discouraged when things aren't going 100% right. You're not the first technician to ever have that problem. Like, definitely just stick with it, figure it out. You'll eventually become resourceful enough to where you'll start to learn who to call, how to call, where to look for answers, and it's really easy to get discouraged.
Yeah, just really briefly on that, because I had this example this morning. There was a conversation about forklifts, and I remember the very first time when I was learning to drive a forklift at a previous job, getting the forklift stuck because I took it off the gravel path. And somebody who had just started with our company was asking, we were asking if he had his certification, if he had ever driven a forklift, and he was like, no. He's like, but I think if, you know, I get the training, I could get my certification here and it wouldn't be a problem. And the only thing I said to him was, don't take it off road. Because I was like, I know that. That's what I've learned.
You are not trained.
Well, no. But then John, our branch manager in Columbus, says, oh, yeah, those knuckleheads, they got it stuck. in the mud. And I was like, oh, yeah. And I reference a different time in JAG's history at corporate when somebody got the forklift stuck. And he's like, no, I'm talking about here. We had two other people get the forklift stuck. And I was like, it's just wild how over time, you know, to somebody who didn't hear all that background conversation, be like, oh, man, I'm the only person that's ever got a forklift stuck. But literally, as we're talking, there's like
multiple
six
cases
people
of it
that have all done that. And so it just was really, really
you begin to think you're the only person with their problems or have done anything
wrong. Well, that's
wrong.
How everybody acts when it happens, because yeah. So they're like, what were you thinking?
Okay, so I didn't have an answer to your question, so he gave you that. But let me give you the advice I give to everybody. Here's the thing. I didn't hire you to fire you. If you're here, it's because we need you and we want you. But answer me this question, Spencer. You've only heard this about 10,000 times. Who are the only people making mistakes?
People that don't ever do anything. People watching The Price is Right.
No, they're the ones that don't make mistakes. The people that make mistakes are the people doing things.
Yeah. Yes,
if you're
yes.
doing something,
I said,
you're
I,
going
I
to just, screw it up. Promise you that.
Yeah.
So fear has absolutely, you know, we've run into what? Probably dozens and dozens of guys here who the very first thing out of their mouth is, I'm afraid I'm going to lose my job.
Yeah.
You don't lose your job anywhere because you made a mistake. I tell you what, you'll lose your job because you didn't make a mistake. That means you're doing something if you're making a mistake. And so I want to encourage you, the person that fails the fastest, this is Elon Musk's way of throwing rockets into space. Let's throw it up there, see if it blows up. You know, NASA wouldn't do it. Yeah, fail as fast as you can. Learn from the failure, and let's change whatever we have to change. Get the next one up there, see if it fails. You know, that's the way we want to run around here. And so fear is just the most, is the worst thing to have. So
yeah, FDR parents said fear. What's
the only
that?
Thing we have
that's
fear
is
fear,
fear
itself.
That's Franklin D. Roosevelt.
And that thing will put you in the back burner fast.
And fear cuts deeper than a sword.
All right, guys. Well, thank you so much for taking the time today. I think this was really, really good. So we'll be back next week to talk about how we started our Columbus branch and a little bit about entrepreneurship.
All right.
Awesome. Thanks for listening.
Yep.